This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 18th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 396. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, Gregor Robertson was mayor of Vancouver when real estate prices and homelessness both soared out of control. Does the rookie Liberal MP stand any chance to solve a national crisis as Prime Minister Mark Carney's housing minister? Andy Yan of the Simon Fraser University City Program joins me to analyze Gregor Robertson's mixed legacy in Vancouver.
This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
In the fall of 2008, the Great Recession, Prime Minister Stephen Harper was in power in Ottawa, Premier Gordon Campbell in power in Victoria. In the United States, Barack Obama became the president. Here in Vancouver, a new face and new party at City Hall. Happy Planet organic juice entrepreneur and NDP MLA Gregor Robertson became mayor, and his Vision Vancouver party, an NDP and Liberal coalition, began a 10-year domination. The top job was getting Vancouver ready for the 2010 Winter Olympics, with infrastructure like the Olympic Village, Canada Line, Vancouver Convention Center, and Sea to Sky Highway. The games came and went. They especially dazzled TV viewers in China. Gregor Robertson went to Shanghai in fall 2010 to the World Expo and declared Vancouver open for business. The money rolled across the Pacific. A real estate boom turned Vancouver into a luxury resort destination. But life in the downtown east side only got worse. The province even declared a fentanyl overdose crisis in 2016.
Gregor Robertson won two more elections after 2008, in 2011 and 2014. He retired from politics in 2018. He made a comeback in 2025 in the federal election as the star candidate for Mark Carney and the Liberal Party.
I, Gregor Robertson, do solemnly and sincerely promise and declare that I will truly and faithfully, and to the best of my skill and knowledge, execute the powers and trusts reposed in me as Minister of Housing and Infrastructure and Minister responsible for the Pacific Economic Development Canada.
Now, to get reaction to news this week that Gregor Robertson is a cabinet minister, the Minister of Housing is my guest, Andy Yan, the Duke of Data, frequent contributor here on the Breaker.News podcast. Gregor Robertson is Mark Carney's housing minister. Not entirely a surprise that Gregor Robertson ended up in cabinet after the profile he got from Mark Carney during the Liberal Party's election campaign. But some people are surprised that he did become the housing minister, especially after his record at Vancouver City Hall for that decade. And he said some interesting things in the halls of the House of Commons, a foot and mouth moment.
Do you think prices need to go down?
No, I think that we need to deliver more supply, make sure the market is stable. It's a huge part of our economy. We need to be delivering more affordable housing. The government of Canada has not been building affordable housing since the 90s, and we've created a huge shortage across Canada. That's where the big need is right now, and I'm very encouraged that the Prime Minister and our commitment right now in government is to double construction and focus on the affordable side.
What was your reaction to Gregor Robertson becoming Canada's housing minister?
Wow. Oh, that's really easy, Bob. I think it's, in one way, when I heard that he was running, I think the idea of him perhaps being a minister of housing, certainly a minister of housing and infrastructure, certainly kind of came across my mind. But then at the same time, you know, the possibilities of perhaps him becoming a minister of the environment or whatever they're going to call that particular portfolio. So in a way, it wasn't as surprising. I actually thought that you also have to kind of look at the seat that he was running for. It was a Liberal seat that was pretty safe in terms of really an electoral viability. But I think it was one through which I wasn't as surprised. I mean, to be honest, I wasn't as surprised that he was going to be Minister of Housing to the extent of really how that signals attitudes towards dealing with housing, not only in Vancouver, but across the country. So I think that it's really one for which I think it's one to watch in terms of whether he'll take. And again, the kind of back and forth, one has to be rather generous that, you know, he's only been in the job for now, almost 72 hours, that it's really one to kind of look at whether he will take Vancouver as really a collection of cautionary tales, or will Vancouver really be the operations manual?
Gregor Robertson comes into this role after being an executive vice president for a company called Nexi, which went through bankruptcy. It still has a factory up in Squamish for prefabricated buildings. Their focus was commercial retail, but they were looking at residential as well. Do you think that Mark Carney's housing platform, which isn't that different from Justin Trudeau's, do you think it's viable?
Right. I think that it's very much, I think, emblematic of the Robertson mayoralty of making many, many promises, but the question is delivery. That I think you have any number of kind of ideas flow throughout that period that Gregor Robertson was mayor. And this is also attached to his council and his staff, which I think is a really interesting kind of element that, you know, I think you and I could talk about is really, it's not only Gregor Robertson, but his staff, that it's also during his era that you see the growth of the mayor's office go over $1 million, which was unlike any other mayor prior to him, the centralization of power. So, but it all comes down to, again, making a lot of promises, but what the deliveries or what the deliverables are. And I think that it's mixed. I think that it's really one of, certainly the city grows, but what price does it come at? Who pays for that price? Who makes money in that? And I think that giving that kind of background and seeing the kind of promises or the ideas, you kind of wonder how well does he understand the assignment. One of the biggest challenges is the fact that Canada is really, really big. It's composed of many different small little housing markets, whether they're rental, whether they're home ownership, whether they're non-market, that it offers a really complicated system through which these promises, I don't know, necessarily identify or work within that system. And I think that is really, I think all those things that I think you identified throughout this podcast is really, I think, part of the question of how well do they understand the assignment and really what's their delivery. And I think if this is building on the Gregor Robertson track record, I think that it's going to be something to watch towards how well it's going to be taken up across the country. I always talk about how, in one way, Gregor Robertson is going to have to adapt to working back east. And in this case, working back east is east of Boundary Road here in Vancouver, that there is, I think, this kind of question of being fairly familiar with, say, the politics of the city of Vancouver, or even just, you know, a very very selective section of the city of Vancouver, compared to the dynamic regional local housing markets throughout the country. So I think that this is also a kind of interesting question, and in that all these promises have been made, but how many will be delivered?
And speaking of that track record, what was Gregor Robertson's legacy as mayor of Vancouver for that decade, 2008 to 2018? What was his legacy?
I think it's one that's mixed. I think it's one that certainly sees a lot of private market development, but then the kind of issues go in that, what kind of housing was it for? Which kind of markets were they for? I think that one also has to acknowledge that he did implement a number of policies around homelessness, in spite of promising to reduce or eliminate homelessness, and homelessness actually going up 30%. He did do things like the heat shelters, that he did, I think, initiate a series of policies that really focused on providing a much more consistent shelter policy for those who are homeless. I think that part of it is also, I think one of the biggest elements of his plan was the Greenest City Action Plan, the attempt to make Vancouver the greenest city on earth. which I think in one way, again, had a number of deliverables towards how we build and what we build. But yet, at the same time, I'm not sure if those policies really have produced the kind of outcomes that they have, as opposed to kind of be the kind of greenwashing that becomes very popular around urban planning around that period. So I think that it's really, again, one that's mixed. And also I think the kind of interesting element is also becoming a city of reconciliation. That was really one of the elements of the Robertson mayoralty. That I think, again, a lot of big ideas, but then how are they delivered? And I think that, again, it's mixed between what was promised again and what was delivered.
Now, rewind to the fall of 2015. It was an interesting time to be here in Vancouver. And at the time, you were working for Bing Tom Architects, teaching at the University of British Columbia. You're now at Simon Fraser University, heading the city program. But back then, you're at UBC in the west side of Vancouver. In the west side of Vancouver, the opposition MLA there for the NDP was David Eby. And you got to put minds together, and you did an interesting survey, an interesting study there, looking at 172 property sales in the west side of Vancouver in the Point Grey area. And you found an interesting trend. Two-thirds of the owners had non-anglicized Chinese names. Mm-hmm. Almost one in five of the properties were bought without a mortgage, likely a cash transaction. This really did open people's eyes to what was going on in the economy, what was going on in housing, what was going on in the remaking, essentially, of the city. And Gregor Robertson had a reaction to that. He basically accused you of racism. He said it was racist tones, of all things. And that seemed to be the last bastion of a lot of people in politics and business. If you brought up where the money was coming from, they would play the race card in return. And you were on the receiving end of that. But your research and history shows you were correct.
Yeah, well, those were good times. Really good times, Bob. And I think that part of it was, that's kind of set up the study was actually how, it was incredibly generous of working with Bing Tom that he funded the research and development arm, BTA Works. And I think it was one through which the setup to the study was actually, before that, was the first publicly available empty condo study in Vancouver. And it's interesting because Gregor Robertson as MLA actually had talked publicly of how 50% of Vancouver condos were empty. And so I, as a researcher back then, I wanted to kind of see, well, what does the data say? Or what are some of the kind of best efforts of data saying how many empty condos we are? So I think that incidentally, it wasn't necessarily as big as we thought it was, but yet at the same time, it's also brought in other kind of patterns to look at, particularly around investment, around how many of condos in Vancouver were owned by investors, through which it all kind of started, I think, a whole trigger of kind of moves towards getting better data. And we could talk about that later on. But moving to very specifically to the study, I think that part of it was really the other side of it was one-fifth were perhaps bought by cash, but then 80% of it were bought by mortgages. And really, it was kind of the realization of the kind of complications in terms of how Vancouver real estate was becoming perhaps a transnational product that's consumed around the world. And really, it's the combination of foreign capital mixed in with local lending. That it isn't just a simple kind of separation of people bringing in Louis Vuitton bags of cash and paying for homes, but yet it kind of brings in this kind of mixture of what happens locally is connected globally. And I think that it was really, I think, one to kind of go into to really a very classic element in behavior in the political economy of housing in Vancouver. I was trying to look up Goodwill's law, the accusation that everything comes down to the accusation of being a Nazi. Godwin's law, that I think in Vancouver we have a version of Godwin's law in housing. And that version is that ultimately that conversation will come in, particularly for those who are trying to defend the status quo and the existing housing system, as, again, this Godwin law is, you got to be a racist. That anybody who goes down that pathway is a racist. So in that kind of political discourse, it's Gregor Robertson, as well as I think several politicians and members of the development community that use that Godwin's law in Vancouver to call folks racist. And I think that it's pretty disingenuous. I think that part of it is it's an insult and cheapens really some serious white supremacist racism that has existed in this city across any number of groups to just defend the existing housing system. So I think part of it is where it is today. And it's kind of funny how today with new data systems, we now know that 50% of the condominiums in Vancouver, in the city of Vancouver, are investor owned. We now know that, I think with additional research, and I think that this is research that a new paper that that Josh Gordon, David Lay, and myself have published, we know really how accusations of racism are used as devices to defend the growth machine, that there is this connection between politics and development that really is focused on growing the city at all costs, producing housing that kind of one asks, housing for whom, through which I think accusations of racism are meant to really stomp down critique and analysis. So I think that it's in that era you also see, I think, this type of virtue coding that occurs, that they do, that things are done when it's coded with a particular virtue. And in this case, it's really trying to cover up what types of housing gets built for whom by if saying that if you look at it or analyze it, he must be a racist.
Now, Gregor Robertson came into office in 2008 promising affordability, promising to end street homelessness by 2015. He delivered bike lanes. The Vancouver Council rubber stamped a lot of very nice looking towers. Ian Gillespie, the developer with West Bank, was one of those who profited greatly and left his stamp on the skyline of Vancouver. Crime, of course, increased. Homelessness increased. It was unaffordable for Vancouverites. A lot of people left the city. Now, Gregor Robertson did not run again in 2018. He announced in early 2018 that he would leave office. He, of course, came back into politics in 2025. Now, back then, in his last few months in office, he said that he was caught off guard by the foreign-funded real estate rush, which might sell with some low-information voters. But for those of us who are watching his every move, watching city council's every move, it didn't really ring true at all. If you look at his history, he went to Shanghai in 2010 after the Olympics, went to the expo in Shanghai, traveled, did a lot of photo ops in China. He joined the Sino Weibo social media network. He promoted his distant relation to Dr. Norman Bethune, who was a hero to Mao Zedong. He even left his wife in 2014 for a Chinese singer, Wan Tingchu. And Wan Tingchu at the time was a Vancouver tourism ambassador as well as a pop singer. And she had an interesting backstory because her mother was a government official in Harbin, China, who got in trouble with the Chinese legal system herself. So here we are, fast forward to 2025, post-Hogue Commission. Post-election, we find out from Mark Carney that no, there won't be a federal budget this year. But Gregor Robertson is expected to become this infrastructure and housing minister. Where do you think this will go?
Well, I think that it's an interesting kind of if you will review of the Robertson other Robertson I think record. I think that a lot of this, I think one thing you also have to add, Bob, is really that moment when he became mayor was really the kind of emergence of social media. And I think that there is, I think, a very symbolic element of that rise in terms of reflecting the Gregor Robertson years was really the rise of the hashtag 25K lunch that I think that this is really a part of a, I think, his record of the fact that a 25K lunch really came about when Bob Rennie had really hosted lunches for $25,000 a plate for Gregor Robertson. And I think it really, again, talks about that particular period in time in Vancouver, where, you know, Gregor Robertson becomes the gateway and the conduit of that type of transnational consumption of Vancouver real estate, and really through which shapes the kind of housing market we have here in Vancouver today. And yet also the kind of subsequent policies in terms of civic election reform, in terms of financing, the role of the foreign buyers tax, of really the emergence of the empty homes tax. It really, I think, talks to will we see a complete and total focus on supply and the avoidance of how it's relating to what kind of demand needs housing as well as the financing. That I think for me, housing policy is a combination of supply, demand, and housing and finance measures, through which I think that, again, it may signal that type of utter focus on things like supply, but yet supply for whom? What kind of housing is going to be built for what kind of purposes? Are we interested in just building for investment, or are we trying to build for young families with children, who are actually, incidentally, the large population that leaves Vancouver during this period? There is, you know, a large population of young folks who do move into the city. I think one has to know in terms of the demographics of Vancouver, but yet there's also that fact that once people hit around 35, 37, a lot of people start leaving the city. A lot of households start leaving the city, and they also take their kids with them. So I think that, again, it talks to this kind of mixed legacy of Gregor Robertson, and really, again, what was promised versus what was delivered, that very much the aspects of affordability just did not happen, that rents are as high as ever when he leaves. It's really the purchasing of homes is just as high as ever when he leaves. So I think that, again, all these promises and all the images of what looks good really completely fail towards its delivery, towards the idea of affordable housing, the growth of cities. I think that, you know, the kind of image of bike paths really actually fail towards actually the need for networks, that these very visible, very kind of photogenic bike paths really get built in key parts of the city. But the fact of the matter is that you actually need them as networks, as they really look great for several kilometers, but then fall into the kind of transportation abyss, that they drop you in the middle of some very nasty transportation kind of nether worlds. Again, the issue of image versus substance, I think, is the kind of critique here.
Well, of course, you mentioned the 25K lunch hashtag, and another famous hashtag from that era was don't have 1 million. And
give us data.
That was another
one. Good days, Bob. Good days. But I think it's in that hashtag. What's interesting is also this kind of movement amongst young Vancouverites who are frustrated at what's going on, and then also are incredibly multicultural. That this is a multi-ethnic, multicultural effort in terms of seeking accountability in housing, through which Gregor Robertson, I think, is part of the establishment to deny it. And I think a lot of this is documented in that new article Josh Gordon and David Lay and myself have had, but because it really kind of captures a certain fin de siècle, the sign of the times, through which I think really indicate the kind of inaction that actually occurs in Vancouver.
And another hashtag is thank you. Andy Yan, always glad to have you on the podcast. Andy Yan, the director of the City Program at Simon Fraser University, wealth of knowledge, and, of course, the Duke of Data.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
Open invitation to Gregor Robertson. If you were listening, or if your people are listening, if you want to come on this podcast and answer all my questions for all the listeners out there, please contact me, bob@thebreaker.news.
Breaker.news podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
InFocusTaiwan.tw. Taiwan probing entertainers allegedly spreading Chinese propaganda. Mainland Affairs Minister Chu Chui-cheng said the ministry will launch a probe into 20 Taiwanese entertainers who spread propaganda in coordination with the Chinese Communist Party, including sharing posts praising China's military exercises around Taiwan, and take any necessary action against them. Meanwhile, former President Tsai Ing-wen, on a visit to the British Parliament, called for more collaboration between Taiwan and the United Kingdom, especially when it comes to countering security threats from foreign forces. In ABC News Australia, PointsBet fined $500,000 after spamming customers with gambling ads. Online gambling provider PointsBet Australia has been fined $500,000 for breaching spam and gambling self-exclusion laws. The Australian Communications and Media Authority found the company sent 508 marketing messages in a two-month period to people who had chosen to exclude themselves from online wagering. Experts have called on the federal government to act on the 31 recommendations from the Parliamentary Inquiry into Online Gambling, specifically to set up a gambling regulator. In Kyoto News, Japan weighs doubling stockpiled rice release to rein in price surge. The Japanese government is considering roughly increasing the rice stockpile to 600,000 tons as rice prices remain at near record highs amid a shortfall. Declines come despite an increase in the 2024 rice harvest of 180,000 tons from a year earlier to 6.79 million tons. The ministry suspects wholesalers and farmers are hoarding rice in anticipation of price hikes. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, head of troubled Oregon Liquor Commission abruptly retires. Craig Prinz, the state administrator tapped by Governor Tina Kotek to steady the beleaguered Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission, announced his abrupt retirement after 2 years on the job. His salary is about $233,000 a year. The agency regulates the sale of liquor in Oregon, generating a projected $576 million for the current two-year budget. In Cascadia Daily News, Peace Health hospital workers start strike, demand fair contracts. 5-day strike includes support staff, medical technicians, midwives, nurse practitioners, and physicians. More than 1,000 employees are striking after months of failed negotiations between Peace Health and the two unions, the Service Employees International Union, and the Union of American Physicians and Dentists. Peace Health St. Joseph is one of the two clinics that the NDP government contracted to treat BC cancer patients. And check out thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com for the stories behind these headlines. We did it! NDP minister celebrates end of hearing where she dodged questions about deaths of children in government care. And arbitrator says BC Lions failed to provide wide receiver a safe workplace. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, because love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Jews in BC, 38,000 of you. May is Jewish Heritage Month in British Columbia. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 18th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 18th of May in 1980, Mount St. Helens in Washington State erupted? I heard the boom from Cub Scouts camp at Roberts Creek on the Sunshine Coast. 57 people died. There were vast clouds of ash that spread across Cascadia. It sounded like this.
But geologists knew it was coming. Something. But no one expected what happened at 8:32 Sunday morning, May 18th, 1980. The Mountain Blew Up.
Those were sounds from The Mountain Erupts, a King 5 Seattle special in 1980. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. And introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $7 a month. For more information, go to bobmackin.substack.com.
Until next week.